From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We begin today with a conversation about Illinois state government. The General Assembly has planned a truncated legislative session this spring, and it should have been well underway by now. Instead, the Omicron surge of the COVID pandemic led lawmakers to cancel all but one in-person scheduled meeting day in January. That said, the early days of session are mostly about committee work, and legislators have been meeting remotely to get the ball rolling on various proposals. Up for consideration are ideas about criminal justice, education, taxes, spending, and so much more that affects all of our lives. Joining us to talk about this is Illinois State Senate President Don Harmon. He's a Democrat from Oak Park and is joining me remotely from his district office. President Harmon, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me again, Brian.
Listeners, you're always welcome to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. If you have a question for the President of the Illinois Senate, or you can always tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, President Harmon, I want to begin with one of the big topics of discussion in Illinois government and politics these days, and that's criminal justice. How do Democrats intend to deal with the increasing public appetite and political pressure for quote, getting tough on crime?
I think that we are all unnerved by the rash of crime that we have seen. I think there's fairly broad agreement on the underlying causes of unemployment and poverty. But I think people want us to do something now to try to address that. I am sure that when the history books are written, we will find some relationship between the pandemic and all of the measures taken in response to it, to the rise in crime. But I think we're looking at ways to be smart on crime rather than reflexively tough on crime. We want to make sure that people who are violent and dangerous are held accountable. But I don't think people view it as mutually exclusive. We can have good ethical policing and hold police officers accountable for missteps, while at the same time investing the resources to keep people safe and to be able to sleep easy at night.
As you know, there's been a push for the better part of a decade to stop this cycle of what in Springfield is euphemistically called penalty enhancement, right? Someone does something bad, you name a law after the victim and increase the penalty. You make it a class 3 felony instead of a class 4 or something like that. And there's been a move to try and block that, especially among Democrats. And yet now we're seeing things moving in the other direction, right? House Republican leader Jim Durkin is pushing for a new crime of organized retail theft, punishable by up to 15 years in prison. Would you support something like that? Do you support moving back into the realm of enhancing penalties, as they say?
I don't think that penalty enhancements work. I think the real motivator is the swiftness and certainty that there will be some punishment. I know Leader Durkin went to the press room and made a big to-do about his proposal. Meanwhile, we Democrats have been working with the Illinois Retail Merchants Association that represents most of the businesses that are directly affected and are working on putting together a plan that is sensible, that doesn't revolve around penalty enhancements, but addresses the problem in a direct and honest way. And I think you'll see a significant proposal coming out of the Democratic caucuses in both the House and the Senate on that topic.
Can you say more about what that will look like, if not increasing penalty enhancements, and how that will work?
Part of it is trying to make sure we devote the resources to this, to make sure that police departments have the personnel to tackle this particular problem. Part of it is trying to shut off the aftermarket. If people can't sell these things that they've stolen easily, they will have much less of an incentive to steal them in the first place. And part of it is looking at how these organized crime rings are actually organized and seeing if we can't chip away at their ability to put these conspiracies into place.
You know, the Senate Democrats, for at least as long as I've been covering them, or let's say the last decade anyway, maybe not as long as I've been covering them. I'm getting older now. But for the last decade, they've been sort of proudly the most progressive caucus in Springfield, I think it's fair to say. And yet there is this tension out there between on criminal justice. You have progressive activists who, you know, favor anything from sort of raising the dollar amount one can be convicted for on retail theft to abolishing prison altogether. That's on the one hand. And then on the other hand, you have people in economically distressed Black communities that want more and better policing. How do you reconcile those competing demands on your side of the aisle?
I think a good dose of common sense goes a long way. I don't think there's any reason to treat someone who steals baby formula and diapers the same way as someone who organizes a mass assault on a shopping mall where 100 people simultaneously smash glass and steal goods. They're both retail theft, but I think everyone can see the difference. And that's why we're trying to be smart on crime and to draw those sorts of distinctions and actually hold people accountable for the gravity of what they do, not just merely checking the box of a particular crime or not.
I want to move on now to budgetary matters. That's also something that takes up a lot of the General Assembly's attention every spring. And as you know, the budget address is scheduled for 1 week from today. So far in the current budget, your income and sales tax receipts have been strong. And just this month, we saw in New York, where tax receipts are also going strong, the governor called for tax adjustments aimed at helping small businesses and speeding up a targeted income tax break, creating property tax rebates for low-income New Yorkers. Do you think Illinois should be looking for ways to reduce taxes with the extra money that's coming in?
I am very proud of the work we've done so far. The budget last year was probably the most responsible budget we've passed in my 20 years in Springfield. We are putting our financial house in order. We are paying our bills not only on time, but actually ahead of schedule. We were rewarded by the credit rating agencies upgrading our rating for the first time in two decades. The most important thing we can do is make sure our state budget is stable and predictable. And once that's in place, then yes, I think we should be looking at ways to reduce taxes on the folks who need it the most. We attempted to do that with the fair tax, the constitutional amendment that actually would have lowered the income tax for 90%+ of Illinois taxpayers. But the voters at the ballot box rejected that. So we'll still be looking for ways. We are acutely aware of the heightened burden of property taxes and the complete lack of a relationship to one's ability to pay those property taxes. And so we're entertaining those, but maintaining a stable, predictable, responsible, balanced budget is the foundation on which all of these other efforts are built.
Rich Miller, you may have seen this at the Capital Facts blog, recently reported on someone unknown who, poll testing a number of ideas on state budget matters. I'd kind of like to ask if you support or oppose some of these ideas. One would be, for as you just mentioned, freezing property taxes statewide for the budget year.
Freezing property taxes is something that's been entertained before. Simple solutions to complicated problems are rarely simple or solutions. It's maybe something that we could do for a year, but it's not going to solve the problem. I think if we're going to tackle property taxes, honestly, we have to do it more holistically. Again, the fair tax would have been the precursor, in my view, to significant property tax reform, but we're going to have to go back to the drawing board based on the results of the referendum on that question.
Yeah, voters, right, rejecting that. What about, there's been a lot of attention on inflation, so there's this poll also asked about eliminating the schedule increase to the gas tax or maybe suspending the grocery tax for a year?
We've looked at issues like that. The grocery tax actually is quite nominal. It's only 1.25%, and it all goes to local governments. The state long ago eliminated the state income tax on groceries. So we could do it, but we wouldn't provide a lot of relief for struggling families. The gas tax, we've been in the process of reconfiguring that to essentially devote all of the resources to improving our transportation system. That has been neglected for decades. There's a portion that still goes to the general revenue fund. I think we could look at that, but we don't want to do something that is flashy showbiz, but doesn't provide real relief to people.
What about the idea of direct cash payments, right? This was poll tested, $200 per child for every family earning less than $50,000 a year. And we've seen Andrew Yang proposing this goes to the universal basic income argument, I guess. But I mean, is there any appetite for that, or is Illinois just maybe not in a fiscal position to even entertain something along those lines?
Certainly in a position to entertain it. Republicans have done something like that in the past. It smacks of electoral politics, frankly. Now, that being said, the federal program that provided a child tax credit was enormously successful and popular, a nice confluence of policy and politics working out. But that's not going to be extended. So certainly, I think that's something we would look at if it's something that Illinois could afford. But I come back to that basic principle, a responsible and durable state budget is the foundation on which all these other opportunities has to be built.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned it was popular and successful. I don't argue with you that it was successful. I do wonder if people even realize, you know, I've seen reporting that people don't even understand where the money came from necessarily. And maybe, you know, the people who passed it don't get the political credit, which is, you know, given how I think you understand, state government is often not top of mind for many Illinoisans. So I don't know if you have a response to that aspect of it.
People may only miss it once it's gone. Perhaps that'll give the federal government a pause and ask them to reconsider it.
Okay. I should remind listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois State Senate President Don Harmon. 800-222-9455. If you have a question for him, if you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. As I mentioned earlier, there was going to be an unusually short legislative session this year. Several weeks were canceled, at least for in-person meetings, on account of the Omicron COVID surge. When do you expect the legislative session to get back on track in person this spring?
I expect we're going to be back next week, the first week in February. I would point out that the schedule was different this year, but we scheduled the same number of legislative days that we normally schedule. We typically are fairly light in January and February and come back in earnest in March. This year, for a variety of reasons, we front-loaded the schedule in January. We did cancel in-person days because of the surge in the virus. But as you mentioned in your intro, we have been able to meet in committees remotely and put a lot of the pieces in place for our return to the Capitol. I'd also point out that especially for committee hearings, the virtual nature, I think, has been one of the most surprising expansions of democracy resulting from the pandemic. People no longer have to travel to Springfield to participate in a committee hearing. They can stay at their kitchen table or in their home office if they so choose. I think that's one of those lasting expansions of democracy that we'll take out of this pandemic.
Interesting. You expect even after things are, you know, back to whatever quote unquote normal is going to be, that there will continue to be virtual participation allowed or perhaps even encouraged in committee process?
I hope that members will, and I expect that members will be in person in committee rooms for all those folks who travel to Springfield. But the ability of an important witness to raise his or her voice in committee without traveling 2 or 4 or 6 hours to the Capitol, that's good for government. That's good for democracy.
Interesting. We need to take a break in about 2 minutes, but I do want to ask you in a general way while we're on the pandemic. Republicans have been making the point for, I guess, going on 2 years now that the General Assembly ought to be more engaged in the policy response, particularly when it comes to things like the mask mandates, tester vaccinate rules, business closures. The governor has been handling most of that through the executive department. Has the General Assembly ceded too much authority to the governor in terms of the pandemic response?
A prior General Assembly some time ago had the foresight to pass a law that said in times of pestilence, the governor has certain extraordinary authorities to deal with that issue. And the governor has used that, I think, responsibly and effectively. The General Assembly remains a check on excesses. And we have been partners with the governor in passing budgets the last 2 years to make sure we're devoting resources to small businesses and to families struggling in the wake of the pandemic. It's a partnership. It's a check. It's a balance. But I think the governor is following the law enacted by a prior General Assembly that had never heard of COVID.
Why not make the mask rules more codified, though, for example? You know, it could be triggers based on, you know, certain case rates or something like that in state law.
By design, the legislative process is a bit slow, and these sorts of responses need to be nimble. If we put in some sort of a mandate, it would be difficult to withdraw it without essentially ceding control to the governor to lift it, for instance. I'm not entirely sure what the difference is. We could pass a law giving the governor the same powers that he has to react in real time, but essentially that's the framework we already have.
Sure, sure. As validated by the courts again and again, although there's still some cases ongoing about some aspects of that. All right, we're going to continue with Illinois Senate President Don Harmon when we come back from a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Please stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois Senate President Don Harmon. He's a Democrat from Oak Park and is joining me remotely from his district office. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join the conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. And President Harmon, you were elected Senate President by your colleagues 2 years ago this month. And in the preceding year, as you acknowledged at the time, it had been quite challenging for the caucus. Three of your colleagues had been indicted or investigated or otherwise implicated in federal corruption probes. A fourth lost re-election following an activist's accusations of unwanted advances. When you were sworn in, you said this.
While we build on the success of the past, let us also use this occasion to think about who we are, what the people need us to be, and how we can reset the tone of the culture here in Springfield.
President Harmon, reset the tone of the culture in the Capitol. How is that project going?
It has certainly been a challenge, all the more so because of the raw nerves created by the pandemic. But I think we're making some meaningful steps. We passed a sweeping ethics bill this past spring, probably the most significant ethics bill of my time in Springfield. Among other things, we enacted a revolving door provision that stops legislators from serving in the General Assembly on Friday, retiring and coming back on Monday as a special interest lobbyist. We're trying to make sure that there's trust in state government. And you know, most everybody down in Springfield is there for the right reasons, to work for the people they represent. And you don't read a whole lot of newspaper stories about legislators doing their jobs and doing them well.
I'm glad you mentioned trust in the government, because I think one of the things that has been so starkly highlighted, I guess, to mix my metaphors there, but declining social trust and declining trust in institutions has been a problem in America for a long time. And the pandemic, I think, accelerated that. I wonder what is the best policy response you've seen, and maybe this doesn't even have to be in Illinois, but the best policy response trying to counter that trend of declining trust in America.
I wish there were a simple answer. I retreat to doing our jobs, to trying to help working families, to trying to make sure that government resources are there for people who need them when they need them. But it's a broader conversation. And I think you're right. The pandemic has only accelerated this. Maybe we are the anomaly. I grew up in a time when most everybody got their news from several local papers that covered the entire metropolitan area, and three television channels that had anchors that we all knew and trusted to at least tell us the truth. And we all were listening to the same news. Now we all go into our own little echo chambers and hear the news we want to hear told like we want it to be told. That can't be good. The polarization in the country is alarming, both extremes pose challenges. But I am mindful of the greater threat to our democracy today. This is something we need to take seriously.
Well, on that note, there was a recent Quinnipiac University poll that asked a sample of Americans whether they think the nation's democracy is in danger of collapse. Yes was the answer from 56% of Democrats, 57% of independents, and 62% of Republicans. I guess that's a rare example of bipartisan agreement, although sort of a horrifying one. Do you think American democracy is in danger of collapse?
I don't, but I'm glad we're all worried about it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Our democracy is a very fragile thing. I have great faith in its resilience. The longer I serve in this role, the more faith I have in the system, which sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. But it won't be resilient if we're all not mindful of those risks. Democracy exists only so long as we all believe in it and work for it. So it's troubling that so many of us are concerned about it. But in the end, that might be what saves it.
I want to ask you a question we got from a listener while we've been talking in the last few minutes. Mike on Twitter at 21st Show, he tweeted us, which others are welcome to do all the time, at 21st Show. He said he would like to hear Senator Harmon's thoughts on the near-term future of higher ed, including financial support for students and for community colleges and universities.
I'm very proud that in the last couple of budgets, we have started the process of reinvesting in higher education. It was neglected for decades, and I was certainly there for part of it. Higher ed is an unusual component of state government in that it's one of the few things to which we attach a price tag. At least at the moment, you have to pay to go to the University of Illinois or to Southern Illinois or to any of the public universities. That created an opportunity for politicians to shortchange it on the appropriation side. We've started to reverse that. I think our higher ed system is one of the most important competitive advantages that we have. I think there is a growing understanding that at least an associate's degree, a two-year community college program, is a lot more like high school than it was 40 years ago. It's a basic prerequisite to advancing in the 21st century economy. So trying to make that more affordable will be important. But I also think we are recognizing, too, that not every young person wants to or should go to college, and we should create opportunities for meaningful job opportunities in Illinois that don't necessarily rely on a college degree. I've told folks in my district, if you want to make a great living, become a welder. They're paying $70,000 as soon as you're trained. Mm. There are plenty of opportunities. If we bring back manufacturing, if we invest in our infrastructure, we can put a lot of people to work doing things that they're good at and not assume everyone needs to be on exactly the same track.
One of my colleagues in the State House press, former colleagues in the State House press room, is now an electrician, and I'm sure doing very well for himself in the trades. Last thing I want to ask you about, I don't know if you've had a chance to see the breaking news this morning, but Justice Stephen Breyer, NPR, is reporting that he is going to be retiring from the Supreme Court. I wondered if you have any immediate reaction to that news. I know Illinois State doesn't necessarily have a big role to play in that, although Senator Durbin is chair of the relevant committee. But any reaction to Justice Stephen Breyer's retirement, which is something that a lot of liberals and people on the left have been hoping for some time?
I wish the Supreme Court of the United States had not become such a political body or a political exercise here in figuring out who retires when. I hope that the justice is well. I hope that he is ready for whatever next challenge in his life is before him. And I also hope that in the just after the first anniversary of President Biden's presidency that it will, we won't see political games with it being too close to the next presidential election to confirm a successor.
Don Harmon is the president of the Illinois Senate. He's a Democrat from Oak Park. President Harmon, thank you for being with us again today on the 21st.
Always good to be with you.